It's Friday, August 12th, 2016. Dynasty Football Factory once again presents the Fantasy Flex featuring Brad Wallace and the Roto Dad Nate Miller. As always, you can hit up the show on Twitter at Fantasy Flex Pod. On this edition, we'll have Fantasy Black Book author Joe Pizzapia, as well as the Fantasy Authorities Kevin Steele. Stay tuned. Found the Fantasy Flex. I am Nate over on Twitter at @Miller_RotoDad. Brad will be along later in the episode, but first we're going to get to my interview with Kevin Steele, founder of thefantasyauthority.com. Kevin Steele, how's it going, man?
Not bad. How are you doing tonight?
All right. You're also the host of the Fantasy Authority podcast too, correct?
Yeah, one of the co-hosts. Yeah.
All right, and everyone, please be sure to check that out. I've enjoyed that one for quite a number of months now. Those guys do a great job. Also, more importantly than fantasy football, Navy veteran.
Yeah, 4 years.
All right, man. Let me just say thanks for that service. All the respect in the world to you and everybody else in the armed forces.
I appreciate it.
Okay, well, over on the Fantasy Authority, earlier this summer, you had a piece that was a kind of a joint piece with some of the other writers on your site there. It's a draft prep and four questions leading into some drafts. We want to touch on all four of them here. And you started off with a sleeper you're really high on going into the season, and we've touched on him a couple times in some previous episodes. I'm actually big on him myself, especially if he falls in drafts to where my liking is. Vance McDonald, tight end of the 49ers, showed some rapport with when Blaine Gabbert took over that offense last season. Why do you like Vance McDonald?
I mean, I think you just kind of have to look at the upside that he brings to the table. I know that he's been kind of a guy who's been up and down a little bit in terms of just value alone. Because, you know, reports out there is kind of what happens this time of the year. We all like to overreact to anything that we hear. But I think he just brings, you know, the most upside of their group that they have there with Bell and then also with Celek. But I think Celek is more of a, you know, a blocking tight end. I don't think he really is going to be a guy who's going to be involved in the offense too much. So I think Vance McDonald has the opportunity, especially if Blaine Gabbert wins that starting job, to really be the number two, you know, in terms of targets there behind Torrey Smith. And we all know Chip Kelly's there, you know, that whole – and I think sometimes that's a little overblown. But I do think one thing it's going to do is we're talking about the massive amount of volume that's going to be there. I mean, if you just look last year with Jim Tomsula, which was a disaster – as a head coach, but I mean, they were last in the league in terms of pass attempts compared to the Eagles, who have been in the top five, you know, every year that Chip Kelly's been in the league. So that massive amount of turnout, yes, the 49ers are not a sexy team. They're not filled with, you know, they're not going to be this high flying offense, you know, per se, but you certainly can't ignore the volume that's going to be there. Vance McDonald right now is somebody who's basically free. You could take him, you know, last pick in your draft as a flyer. And that's certainly what I'll be doing. I love Vance McDonald. I mean, if you look at the draft class that he came out of, it's probably one of the best draft classes in NFL history. I mean, Travis Kelce was in that draft class. Jordan Reed, Zach Ertz. The list goes on of the guys that were in that. It was just absolutely loaded. But if you look at just his metrics and everything that he did in the combine and everything that year, I mean, he was a beast in the things he was able to do. So I absolutely love his upside, and I think that he could be a guy that really surprises people in 2016.
Yeah, and I'm sitting here looking at some numbers from that second half of the season when Gabbert kind of took over that offense at quarterback, and, you know, McDonald averaging five targets a game over the last seven games and three times went over 60 yards receiving, caught three touchdowns. I mean, what are some kind of numbers you could see him putting up as far as the ceiling goes for 2016?
Well, I mean, if you really look at him, I think I certainly would think I think he has tight end one upside. I don't think he's going to be, you know, in the upper half of that, but I think somebody – who you could kind of see in hovering around 60 to 70 receptions. I think 800 yards and probably, you know, 8 touchdowns, I think, is something that's very realistic for him this year.
Yeah, and that would put him right in line with your guy out there in Kansas City, Travis Kelce. I mean, it's some of the numbers he's been putting together, and people are definitely big on him, fantasy circles.
Yeah, so am I, sir. So am I.
Well, let's move right on into the next question you and the company over at Fantasy Authority addressed with this piece. He's asked, who is one a breakout player you think can outperform his current ADP? Now, ADPs tend to change over the summers and, you know, adjust back and forth. And you actually address this with your answer. A lot of people are on Dante Moncrief. Maybe he's the flavor of the season, so to speak. I actually tend to think, I'm like, T.Y. Hilton is, to me, still a couple steps ahead of him. I think Andrew Luck has a good rapport with Hilton. But let's be honest, I don't think there's going to be much of a run game. Years are getting up there to Frank Gore. I mean, who knows what he has left in the tank at all. And Andrew Luck back, healthy, hopefully for the whole season, going to fling it around. I think it's no stretch to say he can make 2, even 3 wide receivers fantasy relevant. And Dante Moncrief is your guy to outperform even the expectations of people that are big on him.
Well, I mean, I think the fantasy community as a whole right now absolutely loves Dante Moncrief this year. But sure. I mean, I'm not alone in that thinking. But I think if you just look at his numbers with Luck and without Luck, I think it really, you know, stands to reason why you should be in love with him. And he's currently going somewhere around the 5th round right now, which, I mean, that's still excellent value for a guy who could end up putting up high-end wide receiver 2 or even wide receiver 1 numbers. I mean, even last year, he was a wide receiver 22 in standard scoring and with 32 receptions on 51 targets for 351 yards and 5 touchdowns. And those were in the 7 games he played with Luck last year. So, I mean, when you look at that, and then, I mean, if you also have to think of the other things that, I mean, him and Andrew Luck have an amazing chemistry together as he accounted for a target share of 28%, which was just behind T.Y. Hilton, who received 33% of the targets. So I think you also have to love his upside in the red zone as well. And let's be honest, Andre Johnson's gone. Kobe Fleener's gone. Yep. So he really has the opportunity. And, you know, I know we're talking about Moncrief, but Philip Dorsett is also a guy to keep a close eye on, especially if something were to happen to T.Y. Hilton. But Dante Moncrief overall, I think, just has – one of the higher ceilings when you start to look at the wide receivers at around this point and what he's able to do. I mean, I would not be surprised if he finishes a wide receiver 1.
Yeah, and as you said there, if he falls back to a 5th round in a standard, you know, kind of 12-team league, yeah, I definitely like that value. For me, you know, my point being, I still think T.Y. Hilton probably outperforms him overall, especially in a PPR format. But, yeah, you hit on a couple of points I was actually going to make there if you didn't get to him first. Kobe Fleener now in New Orleans. Dwayne Allen, you know, maybe he stays healthy, maybe he doesn't. I kind of like him if he can stay healthy, but that's been a big question of his. Yeah, Moncrief coming in right around 6'2", 220 pounds, obviously a bigger target than the 5'10 Hilton out there. And, yeah, that end zone potential for him could catapult him to a number one receiver, especially in some deeper leagues. Yeah, and also, like I said, Andrew Luck, you know, can he make possibly 3 wide receivers viable in a fantasy format? Sure, and Philip Dorsett was the exact guy you hit on him, and I was going to, you know, back that right up and saying, yeah, he's definitely the guy that Andrew Luck could, Hilton, Moncrief, and Dorsett, they could all be fantasy viable in even a standard league. Let's move on to the next question here. And a guy you like as a bounce back, and another guy I agree on as well, Torrey Smith out in San Francisco. Does the quarterback situation out there scare you away, or do you think Torrey Smith's going to be that go-to guy one way or the other, putting up some big numbers?
I think he's going to. I mean, he wasn't – so if you look at his numbers from last year, certainly they weren't what you expected him to be after he signed that huge contract with San Francisco, but he didn't really get many opportunities. He only had 62 targets last year, but, I mean, on those 62 targets, he still had 33 receptions for 663 yards. And he also, I mean, which he also tied his lowest career total in touchdowns with 4. The things to like about him, though, are the amount of targets that are now opened up because Anquan Boldin's gone, Vernon Davis is gone, and that opens up 141 targets for him. And right now you have to look around. Yes, we mentioned Vance McDonald, and I think the other guy you could look at is probably a Bruce Ellington, maybe a DeAndre Smelter. But Bruce Ellington is a guy who's starting to gain steam in, you know, fantasy circles. But I think he slots more as a, you know, a slot receiver. But Torrey Smith still has, you know, he still has the wheels to be a guy who's, you know, more of a go route. So you look at the wide receiver ones in Chip Kelly's offense. I mean, just go back and look what DeSean Jackson did, or Jeremy Maclin, or even Jordan Matthews for that matter, in his offense. And they've all been, you know, high end right there in the wide receiver one category. And I think you can see something similar to that for Torrey Smith. I don't think he's going to be a wide receiver one, but I certainly think, especially as a ninth round pick and where he's going right now, he can provide high end wide receiver three. Wouldn't be surprised if he finishes a wide receiver two, to be honest.
Yeah, and you mentioned a couple names in there that I actually like, one being DeAndre Smelter. You're the first person to mention him on our podcast this year, and I'm glad you did, my Georgia Tech guy. But moving on, yeah, DeSean Jackson. I was actually going to ask you, who do you prefer, a Torrey Smith or a DeSean Jackson?
I'd probably go DeSean Jackson just because I think he runs a little bit more. He has a little bit more refined route tree. They're a little, you know, there's not a huge difference, but for me, I'd probably lean towards DeSean Jackson.
Yeah, sure. And obviously, I mean, the comp on those guys is these are two guys that the one thing that didn't leave Torrey Smith last year was that yards per catch. And that's always been big. He's a, he's always been a boom or bust guy, even if you couldn't rely on him to get a lot of targets. I mean, he's got game breaking speed. DeSean Jackson does. I mean, maybe Mike Wallace in Baltimore is that same type of player where they're probably not going to do it week in and week out, but they're big games. You want them on the roster. You kind of see it that way?
Oh, for sure. I mean, Torrey Smith, even more so in like a best ball format, is fantastic. But Torrey Smith has certainly risen, you know, because actually whenever we wrote this article, he was actually, I mean, even – so I've been on Torrey Smith all summer. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, he's just steadily climbed. I mean, he's someone who's skyrocketed yet, but certainly the fantasy community's on him. But even as a ninth-round pick, you really can't do – much worse than that.
Yeah, I was going to ask, what's the highest round you would gamble on a Torrey Smith?
It's tough. It really depend on who would be there for me. Corey Coleman right now is going in the ninth round, the same round as Torrey Smith. And not to get too far off like the beaten path here, Coleman, I love his upside this year, even though he's with Cleveland. But we're also talking about a guy that's playing for San Francisco. So, like, I don't know. Like, there's a few guys right around there that I may prefer over him. Maybe a Sterling Shepard if he was still there. But Torrey Smith, like I said, in terms of just raw upside and what he can give you and maybe a little bit higher floor, I don't think you can do much worse.
Yeah, I mean, maybe a guy you can get in the 10th round of a 12-team redraft league and he delivers you six-round value. I mean, you can't argue with that come the end of the season. Well, let's touch on one more topic that you and the crew over there hit on in this piece. And you were asking a highly touted fantasy option that you think might be a bust. And you said DeAndre Hopkins in Houston. I kind of view this guy as a little QB neutral. And I'm going to, you know, bring up the point you made here is that, look, you know, we're not saying he's bad, but he's probably going to regress from last season. Now, my co-host here on the Flex, Brad Wallace, he's got him. I mean, he's justified all summer this guy being a top five pick, not just a top five wide receiver, but a viable top five pick. How much regression do you see for DeAndre Hopkins? I actually like big old Brock Osweiler.
So with DeAndre Hopkins, like I mentioned, that I don't think he's just going to fall off the map. But he's certainly, and I think, in for some regression. If you look at his numbers from last year, I mean, it was kind of a tale of two halves. Not that like he just completely fell off in the second half, but his numbers certainly declined. But so last season with the Texans averaged 38.6 pass attempts per game, which is significantly higher than the 30.3 they had the year prior. So if you want to start to think, okay, well, what caused this to happen? And to be honest, the defense started off terribly and really put the offense in a position that really had to throw the ball more. And then Arian Foster went down, and they were left with Alfred Blue, who is awful, and, you know, some other characters like Jonathan Grimes and things like that, and they didn't really have anybody else. And to go with also with DeAndre Hopkins, you have to really look at who else was there with them last year outside, you know, in the offense and they didn't have anybody. It was him and then some guys, right? So, I mean, last year he had the third most targets at 187. So when you start looking at things a little bit more, like I said, you have to really look at the defense to really understand what happened, because they were in so many negative game scripts last year and the first half of the season. Because over his first eight games, he averaged 8.25 receptions, you know, on 108 yards, 0.75 touchdowns per game. But then when you look, when the defense really started to step it up, he, over his final eight games, he only averaged 5.6 receptions, 81.3 yards, and 0.625 touchdowns per game. So like I mentioned, so the what caused the drop? And it was the defense. So during the first eight games, again, the defense allowed 25.8 points per game, and which started out a 3-3-5 record. But over the second half, the defense came to life, and they only allowed 13.5 points per game. So obviously, they didn't need to pass the ball nearly as much. They weren't behind and having to play catch up all the time. To make a really long answer, try to shorten it up here. They also went out and added Lamar Miller, and everybody loves Lamar Miller. I love Lamar Miller. I think everybody does. He's finally going to get his shot to really show what he can do. With a really strong running game, they're not going to need to throw the ball like they did. And then if you look at their other options, I think their receiving options are even better than they were last year with, you know, drafting Will Fuller. Braxton Miller is more of a raw kind of, not really knowing what to do with him. But Jalen Strong is kind of another player that no one's really talking about that I kind of like. And I think he could steal some targets from him and take away some of that. I just think you're going to see a regression, not huge. For me, I wouldn't take him in the top five. I probably wouldn't even take him in the first round, but that's me. I think if you could get him in the second round, I'd feel better about it. But like I said, that's me. But there's just guys that I like who think I feel like have a little bit higher ceiling, a little bit more safer.
I'm going to press you on Hopkins a little bit here, though, and bring up a name that I keep hearing. I don't know that I necessarily buy it, but I keep hearing as a regression candidate as well. Tell me which way you lean between these two guys, DeAndre Hopkins or an Allen Robinson?
The Allen Robinson thing is a little bit insane to me. because I get it with people saying how he's going to regress, because people, you know, the common thing is the defense that we think, because really what led to the breakout last year from the Jaguars was quite simply how bad their defense was. And far more pass attempts, far more volume, because they were always on the field because the defense was just awful. And so this year they went out, you know, they drafted Miles Jack and Jalen Ramsey. They brought in Malik Jackson. So, I mean, the defense is much more improved. So you say, okay, well, this is probably going to hurt Allen Robinson because they're going to lose some of that volume. I don't necessarily buy it. I think he's locked in as the wide receiver one there. I don't think he's all of a sudden going to lose a ton of targets, or he's, you know, that red zone ability that he has. Of course, they still have Allen Hurns and Julius Thomas, who is healthy, who was also hurt to start the year last year. But yeah, I don't buy it. Allen Robinson was one of the most consistent fantasy wide receivers last year that money could buy. Obviously, he was an absolute steal, considering I think he was like a sixth or seventh round pick last year. But I would take Allen Robinson ahead of DeAndre Hopkins. It's not a huge thing. I think I have Allen Robinson fifth in my rankings. And then I believe I have DeAndre Hopkins like seventh or eighth. So it's not a huge difference. But I do like Allen Robinson.
Yeah, I do, you know, bring up the name, obviously, because, yeah, there's a lot of talk of regression for the Hopkins and Robinsons of the world. And let's be honest, they're two of the most, you know, physically gifted, talented, you know, big receiving targets. And, you know, they're both going to be wide receiver ones, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And, you know, there's actually another name that I was actually thinking about today, which I guess I'll kind of turn this one on you a little bit to see what you think, because Dez Bryant is a guy who's kind of just there. He's not gaining a lot of buzz, and he's sort of falling down a little bit in terms of ADP and things like that compared to where he's been. Like, so what do you think people have a problem with him, and like, why do you think he's falling a little bit
in terms of where he usually goes? I mean, back in 2014, he was a big part of me winning big in a league, and I definitely was all about him then. I think what you're seeing with Dallas is if Ezekiel Elliott can come through on all the crazy hype and crazy projections, that team's going to pound and pound and pound. They're going to look to protect Tony Romo, who is also coming off an injury-plagued season. Dez Bryant coming off an injury season. And I think people are looking, well, that protectionist is going to cap, that protectionist mentality of those two players is going to cap that offense as a whole. Dez Bryant, I'm not targeting him in the first round. I think he would probably have to fall to me in the back of a second round. You kind of in line with that?
I go back and forth. I don't really know. Like he's sort of interesting because we do know how dominant he can be, and those touchdowns that are there for him. And they still don't really have anybody else. They have Terrence Williams and Cole Beasley and an aging Jason Witten. And yep. It's all going to depend on Tony Romo, isn't it? I mean, if Tony Romo can stay healthy for a full 16 games, I think he could be a guy who is sort of that value that you get at a value in the second round that could turn out to be. I mean, no one would be surprised if he finished wide receiver one. You know, I think he has that.
I think, and honestly, and this just sounds strange, but the Dallas Cowboys have apparently been pursuing Josh McCown, and maybe Dez Bryant's value goes up if they're able to get a McCown. So say Romo gets hurt, we've got a quarterback who's not rookie Dak Prescott.
Oh, yeah, I think that certainly – I think puts fantasy owners a little bit more at ease because, I mean, last year it was just awful with – what was it, Brandon Whedon and Matt Castle and everybody else that they tried to trot out there. I mean, I'm surprised. I know they were going after Nick Foles as soon as he was released, but he went to, back to Kansas City with Andy Reid. But, yeah, I mean, that if they have to do whatever they can to get Josh McCown from Cleveland, if they can do it.
Yeah. Well – somehow we brought Cleveland into this discussion and Josh McCown. Well, you know, let's just wrap it there. Thanks a lot for doing this, Kevin.
No, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Well, before you cut out, where can the people find you if they want to hit you up with questions on social media or anything like that?
You can find me on Twitter at FantasyWrath13. And then, or, you know, since I also have control of the Fantasy Authority Twitter account, you could also go there at FF_authority and find us there.
Of course, and always at thefantasyauthority.com, right?
Always, always there.
All right. Thanks a lot, man.
No, thanks for having me. It's been a blast.
All right. Let me tell you all about the all-new FanUp Network app. The guys over there have created a fantasy football resource that not only tracks teams and scores across multiple platforms, but also provides the latest player updates and injury news, all while saving you time. The app can be found for Google and Apple devices by simply searching keyword FanUp. That's F-A-N. UP. Now let's get Brad in here. How can the people connect with you, Mr. Wallace?
They can find me at UGA Good on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat.
All right, man. You ready to talk some quarterbacks?
Oh, yeah. Let's do it.
Okay. From SiriusXM Radio, Fantasy Alarm, Sporting News, and the list just goes on. Fantasy Black Book author Joe Pizzapia. What's happening, man?
I know, it's a very long intro. I apologize. I have been saying it all week. I'm the fungus of fantasy sports. It's pretty hard to not pick me up somewhere at some point. I'm thrilled to be joining you guys. Thanks so much for having me.
Pleasure's all ours, man. Well, first things first, what is RPV? I think I've been reading your book for about 20 years now, but for those that are new to the concept, what is RPV?
Well, first of all, thank you for reading, and no matter how many you've read or haven't read, I appreciate that. RPV stands for Relative Position Value, and it's kind of the revolutionary statistic or tool, I should say, that I've used my entire fantasy life pretty much, and that I decided to kind of put in my manifesto, which became the Fantasy Black Book series for baseball and football. And what relative position value is, it's very specific. It is a system that allows you to really get a sense of how much a player is really worth compared to his peers. It's one of the only system out there that really makes you understand and quantifies position scarcity. And it's adaptable for every format, for every style, for every league. We're talking PPR, we're talking standard. In baseball, you mean roto, you mean points leagues. Whatever it is, it's completely adaptable for, you know, everything from a 10-team league to a 24-team league. And that's what makes it so special. And basically, it's a simple percentage, and it takes into account projections. It takes into account last year's stats, three-year averages for young baseball players, minor league stats. And basically what it does is creates a simple percentage, and you start to see where the drop-off is and how much better a player is. Let's say how much better Cam Newton is at quarterback in a league that just has 12 quarterbacks starting every week, and you see what the percentage is if he's a plus 24, let's say, over the fantasy league average, because everybody's going to have a number one quarterback or a number one running back for the most part, or a number one wide receiver. And it also shows you where that goes into the negative too. So, which is equally important. And the guys that fall below the fantasy league average for whatever league you're playing in. And fantasy at its core is very simple. It's about me outscoring you as much as we possibly can. And if I can do that consistently, then chances are I'm going to be very successful. And I have to say the readers have had great success. This is my eighth book now in 5 years, and it's number one in fantasy sports again on Amazon, and actually number one in football this week on Amazon, which is pretty crazy. But it's clearly working. People are winning money with this, I can assure you.
Yeah, I know. I definitely contributed to that ranking there on Amazon for you.
I appreciate that.
I got to say, folks, it's definitely worth the minimal investment into Joe's digital pocket to pick up this piece of fantasy gold.
I appreciate that. Yes, basically for $4.99, you're feeding my children's addiction to Star Wars. So I think that's a very, very positive thing.
So I'm, you know, pass it on to the generation. If you could see the wall behind me here, you would see C-3PO, Chewbacca, R2-D2, and Yoda.
Well, I'm actually on location right now doing this show, but if you were at my house, you would see. I could have brought you into the other room, and you could have seen the full length Han Solo decal that we just put up in my daughter's room the other day. So very, very exciting stuff.
All right, Brad, what is it you like to say about our show? Your little tagline there.
Oh, may the flex be with you.
Like that.
All right, let's get into some quarterbacks. I'm not going to give the folks too much of your book. You're going to have to go buy it and read it for yourself. But for me, I've definitely taken some interest toward your elite QB rankings, and I'm going to pull a couple of guys off that six QB list and say, we got a dynasty startup draft coming up this Saturday. I'm picking one spot ahead of my co-host Brad here, and I've already told him. I'm like, look, dude, I may go Cam Newton or Russell Wilson. Joe, am I crazy, or is that a good investment in a dynasty league?
I don't think you're crazy. Is it a standard? That's my only question, or is it a PPR?
It is PPR.
The PPR gives you a little bit more flexibility. I think in the standard, I don't think it's crazy at all, because if you're looking at the one position that doesn't turn over year after year, I mean, how many years have we been talking about Tom Brady and Drew Brees? And how many running backs did you pull off the waiver wire last year? How many Sharkhandrick Wests? How many Thomas Rawls? How many guys every year seem to come around in these different skill set positions, and subsequently in the wide receiver position too? We see these guys on a yearly basis, high-profile young wide receivers come in and make a difference. We saw it a couple years ago in that class with Beckham and Kelvin Benjamin, and you know we're going to see some of it this year too with Treadwell probably and a few of the others, Dotson eventually. But I don't think it's crazy because you're getting a guy who's going to give you rushing touchdowns. You're getting a guy who is going to give you passing touchdowns. You're getting a guy that the rules are set up in the NFL for his success and for his protection, which I think is equally important, because you're making a dynasty investment in a guy's career, and that is a very, very particular thing to do. And I believe that the quarterback, even Andrew Luck, I could put in that scenario as well, getting him on the cheap this year if you want to wait a little bit longer. I don't think it's a crazy argument whatsoever. Can you wait on him? Possibly, but if you did it, I would be the first one saying, good job, you got a heck of a start for the next 5-10 years.
All right, Brad, are you going to be mad at me if I take Cam Newton right there at number five?
I'm not going to be mad. if Cam's still sitting there when my pick rolls around right after you, I might be looking at picking him as well. But if he's gone, you know, Russell Wilson would be a nice secondary option, or I have a feeling there's going to be a couple good running backs still there, as I feel like most of the first two, three, four picks are probably going to be wide receivers.
All right, no doubt. And, you know, we're talking about a dynasty format here. Aaron Rodgers is a little bit older than the Cam Newtons and Russell Wilsons of the world, a little bit more miles on the tires. But in a redraft league, Brad, we've been pretty high on Aaron Rodgers.
Well, Aaron Rodgers is my number one quarterback in, you know, standard redraft league formats. And I think he's going to have an explosive monster season. Jordy Nelson is healthy for the most part. I think that minor knee injury in the opposite knee from the ACL last season, I think is going to be fine by the time week one rolls around. So I think that offense is going to be humming, and Aaron Rodgers is going to finish the season number one overall as far as fantasy quarterbacks go.
All right, Joe. Now, on your elite list, I see Cam Newton, followed by Andrew Luck, followed by Russell Wilson. And then Aaron Rodgers coming in at fourth. Why do you like those other three ahead of Mr. Rodgers up in Green Bay?
Well, you know, it's Rodgers is terrific, and I'm not going to hate on Aaron Rodgers whatsoever. But I think more important than the numbers of the rankings, this is where we get in trouble. It's the RPV number that's next to those guys that really matter. Because you can see that Luck and Cam Newton I have in double digits, followed by Russell Wilson, and then Rodgers is just a plus three. And that's fine. That's still good. But there's not that huge gap between him and, say, a guy like Philip Rivers, super late, that you can get. A guy like Eli Manning, who had a phenomenal season last year, very quietly. Heck, even Matthew Stafford last year had a terrific season in the second half once Jim Bob Cooter took over running that offense. So when you're just talking about the one quarterback league and a 12-team league, there's so much depth there that I can understand going for the Cam Newtons and Russell Wilsons because of what they're able to do with their legs, or the Andrew Luck, who has the potential to be an absolutely prolific passer and is still, again, ages on his side. Whereas Rodgers is getting older. There are questions about the line last year. I'm not one who's ready to stick my neck out for him when I can wait and end up with one of those other quarterbacks that I mentioned much later. And this is my whole argument towards the two quarterback league, because how frustrating, and I'm going to put this to both of you, I'm going to turn your podcast around you. How frustrating is it when you're sorting and you're going through the draft, right? And you're in a draft and you're sorting points and you look and all the highest point getters still are quarterbacks. And they're on the board and you know most of them are just going to hit the waiver wire. Why is it that we're still so far behind and that two quarterback leagues or quarterback, you know, super flex leagues aren't the standard where we're utilizing the most productive fantasy players on the field? It's the quarterback position. That's what the NFL is about. And the fact that we're still kind of lagging behind as an industry, as a standard there, it took a while for PPR to catch on, and now I feel like it's the same thing. Do you guys think that we don't utilize the quarterback position enough?
Take that one, Brad.
Yeah, I would have to agree with you. I think it would make sense. And we are behind. You know, you need to add in two quarterbacks because so many of those quarterbacks that go undrafted, you know, outscore most of the wide receivers and running backs. So, yeah.
By a lot more.
Yeah, a lot.
We're talking like guys who are like, we're looking at these running backs with like a 115 cap on them probably. And meanwhile, you know, there's like Derek Carr floating around who's going to put up 260 points. And it's just, it blows my mind. Like, why are we doing this to ourselves? We're like fighting over, it's like we're fighting over the scraps, like some sort of shelter for the homeless, and we're trying to like figure this out with running backs. Meanwhile, all these quarterbacks and all these points are there, and a whole other challenge of trying to manipulate the bye weeks and squeeze as much as you can in a 12-team league with 24 quarterbacks active every week.
Hey, Joe, don't say Derek Carr too loud, okay?
I'll try to keep it down.
That's my guy. Okay, now
I'm sorry, Brad. David Carr. I'm sorry. This is what happens. This is what happens when you're doing baseball and football back and forth on a daily basis, and your mouth starts going ahead of your head sometimes.
Yep.
That's what happens. But my apologies, David Carr. But Derek Carr, let's light a candle for him as well. He's probably laying on his back somewhere.
No. You had it right the first time. David Carr was Sac City, and Derek Carr's the younger brother with the Raiders.
That's what I thought. Yeah, and I started to second guess myself a second here. Now I sound like a complete idiot because my brain is crap. You know what I've been doing all day? I've been putting furniture together. That's what I've been doing to get all day.
Oh, no.
She's turning four on Sunday, and I've been putting furniture together, and I'm just, my mind is not right. Derek Carr, I'm right. I was good the first time. I second guess myself.
This is now the third podcast that we have mentioned David Carr now.
Yeah. The guy's never going to live it down, man. He's just not. And I got to tell you, 2 weeks ago, I was building a playset for my four-year-old son out in the yard, and that thing took all day. I got all the pity in the world for you, man.
Oh, well, it's funny. Did I say it right the first time, and I just got completely tongue-tied and lost?
Yes, okay. And the reason I say, a little out of context there. I wanted to keep it down on the Derek Carr because you, Brad, myself, and seven other industry insiders are going to be taking part in our first ever Fantasy Flex Pro Bowl, as we're calling it. That's a 2QB league, and I don't want anybody sniping Derek Carr from me.
Well, there you go. I'm going to take both cars just so I can be sure.
Yeah, you can, because you got to have the mentor and the protege, right? All right, you got two more quarterbacks on this elite list in the Fantasy Black Book. And at number five, I'm looking at the ancient one, Drew Brees. And at number six, I'm looking at Mr. Suspension, Tom Brady. I think those guys are pushing a combined 100 years old. But they still might be better than most QBs in the league. What's the highest pick you're willing to take on Drew Brees in a standard 12-team format?
You know, I see him. Where his ADP is right now, I think, is fair. Again, I kind of harken back to the same thing, which is put him in the same category as Rodgers, which I can spend a fifth-round pick on these guys, and that seems to be somewhere around. I just saw the Flex League draft. I was covering that, and that's a deeper league. I think that's 15 teams. So I think he went in the fifth round there, somewhere around there, and I think Rodgers might have fallen somewhere around between the fifth and the seventh. But if you're going to wait that long, you might as well just keep waiting, because if you only have to start one, that's nuts. Because there's just not as much of a gap. They're all guys who are going to throw over 4,000 yards. They're all guys who are going to throw for 30-plus TDs. They all have the same system around them all the time. So that's the trouble I have with the quarterback position, is if you're not going to separate yourself in the league by having two quarterbacks mandatory or the super flex position, then you might as well just wait. And you could even wait and do a really solid tandem with – either Derek or David Carr, or any Carr that you like. I mean, you really can. And it's true, because you look at them statistically, and when you break them down, how much difference is there going to be? You're not seeing Drew Brees throwing for 5,000 yards anymore. That Drew Brees is gone. And the Aaron Rodgers, who was running around all over the place, you know, making plays happen, that might be a memory at this point as well.
Sure. Brad, I know from reading Joe's work here that he's willing to take Tom Brady in a later pick and sit on him through this four-game suspension. But what about yourself, Brad? What do you got to say about Tom Brady for the season? And maybe Jimmy Garoppolo backing him up.
Well, if Tom Brady's if he goes around where his ADP is, I think he could be a good value. There's a couple of good replacement level QBs that you could plug in for those first four games, Kirk Cousins, Tony Romo, Eli Manning, Derek Carr, and even a Joe Flacco all have really easy matchups for the first 4 weeks. And when you pair that replacement quarterback in with what Tom Brady's going to give you the rest of the season, I think, you know, you're sitting at a top five quarterback value. So I will be targeting Tom Brady in as many leagues as possible if he, you know, falls to that, you know, seventh, eighth round. I've seen him in a few mocks. People take him as early as the fourth or fifth, and if that happens, I definitely won't be having Brady on any of my rosters. But hopefully that doesn't happen in too many leagues.
All right, Joe, I'm not giving you the easy Tom Brady analysis. Is it worth owning Jimmy Garoppolo the first 4 weeks of the season?
No, it's not, for the same reason why it's worth owning Tom Brady in drafts, because the quarterback position is going to yield a fair amount of bodies on the waiver wire that you can throw in there. I mean, if you can get a Jameson Winston, I mean, if you think about the guys that are going to be floating around there towards the end of drafts, I mentioned Stafford, and I keep harping on him, but I feel like everybody's so down on him just because Megatron's not there. But if you look at statistically last year, how many games was Calvin Johnson really either healthy or a factor at all anyway? And the year before, he was injured quite a bit, and Stafford was still fine then. So I think it's much easier to make a case for drafting a suspended Tom Brady and filling that position quite easily till he comes back, and then having a guy like Brady who could be an elite quarterback or is an elite quarterback, as opposed to drafting a guy like Le'Veon Bell and trying to, you know, keep that hole working for you and being productive for 4 weeks. That is a much, much harder task.
Sure. From a dynasty standpoint, I say free Jacoby Brissett.
You are the only one saying that.
Hey, I'm an ACC guy, and we might be the fifth of the Big Five, but you know what? I got to stick with my guys there. All right. Joe, tell us the top guy who's in your tier two of quarterbacks.
The top guy for me in my tier two of quarterbacks, you know, and this is important too, because I think that when you get to a point when you're analyzing the quarterback position, so much of it, I believe, boils down to consistency. I think that a lot of us, sometimes we want to put projectability behind a lot of other things ahead. I think when you got guys who are coming back in the same system every year with the same pieces around them every year, I think that that's something that you're looking for. And I'm a guy that actually was going to knock guys who have trouble staying on the field, the Carson Palmers of the world. I know he's a one in a lot of leagues for them. You know, I get it. I get why people want to put Carson Palmer. I understand last year was terrific. But do we not remember how old he is? And do we not remember the fact that 2 years ago when he wasn't healthy, what happened to the rest of that offense? And that's why I don't own any shares of any of those wide receivers this year. So for me, in the second tier, it's right at the top. It's Stafford and Ryan just because of consistency. And then I have Carson Palmer after that and Andy Dalton. And then Tony Romo, again, coming off the injury, and Kirk Cousins. So, I mean, the usual suspects there in that second tier, when you're looking at that grouping, I think that those are plenty of names that you can roll with for a couple weeks if you want to draft a Tom Brady. And this is my whole argument. Think about the names that I'm putting out there, right? Stafford, Ryan, Andy Dalton. These were all guys that put up a fair amount of fantasy points. In the daily fantasy world are big-time point getters. And yet, here we are talking about this second tier group as though they don't really count. Meanwhile, these are franchise guys making tons of money. So for me, I think the second tier is strong there. I think Matt Ryan is a little underrated at this point because even though he wasn't what we wanted him to be last year, you look at the overall numbers and it's still pretty good. And you imagine that he's still got that huge ability to have that big time weapon with Jones there, and that's the big difference too. When you have a big time weapon, I think you gotta like what you saw to Kirk Cousins too in the second half as a QB too. I think you gotta like the fact that even though the splits were bad on him last year, home and road, that he was able to kind of come around a little bit towards the end and into the playoffs a little bit. I'm not a big Marcus Mariota guy. I just don't see a lot around him. So I think that drop off is pretty significant once you get past Cousins, and you know you could play around with Tyrod Taylor, but there's a lot of questions whether or not he can really develop into a legitimate quarterback in the NFL.
Okay, I want to thank Mr. Joe Pizzapia once again for coming aboard and talking quarterbacks with us. You can find Joe's Twitter handle over at JoePizzapia17. Also, definitely be sure to check out the Fantasy Football Black Book for 2016 over Amazon. Some good stuff there. Brad, just before we close out here, what do you got in the pipeline, man? I know you're we're starting the transition, not quite yet, but pretty soon from going to some mock drafts into the real deal and all the mini leagues that you and I both play in. How excited are you for that? And what do you got coming down the line from an analysis standpoint, maybe some articles, maybe some rankings updates or anything else?
Oh, yeah, very excited. Draft season is upon us. At the first big dynasty draft this Saturday, the 13th. Looking forward to that very much. And then a little two-week hiatus, probably hit up a few more mocks before the rest of the other 7-8 leagues. I don't know how many it's going to be before it's all said and done that I'm in. All those drafts kick up. In addition, I'm working on another article, probably coming out on WeTalkFantasySports.com. Within the next 2 weeks, I would say. That's pretty much everything that's going down.
Yeah, and I hit up Howard Bender's Mock Draft Army one more time on Thursday evening. I'll be doing a write-up for that coming up pretty soon on the sporting news in the fantasy section. One league Brad and I are in together, along with Joe, mentioned it a little bit earlier, got other industry insiders like Howard Bender, some other Fantasy Alarm, other sites. It's going to be a great time for us. We're calling it the Fantasy Flex Pro Bowl, the first edition here in 2016. That draft's coming up for us August 22nd, a Monday night. And we'll record the podcast during that, and that'll be the whole episode for Tuesday morning, August 23rd, as we break down all the happenings from that. And Brad and I kind of give you our strategy. Don't even know where we're going to pick yet, so definitely tune in for that one. But for now, this episode is coming to a close. As always, please be sure to hit us up with any comments, criticisms, or questions over on Twitter at FantasyFlexPod. You can now check out the Fantasy Flex at our new home, DynastyFootballFactory.com. Or if you prefer, all episodes can also be found on iTunes, TuneIn Radio, Player FM, or Blog Talk Radio. Until next week, I'm Nate, that's Brad.
Why the flex do we always keep talking about David Carr?
I feel like that was a long...